West is pretty dry, so right now there's not enough water there to get oil from oil shale and have enough water for people, plants, and animals to live.
Another way of putting it is that getting oil from oil shale is very expensive, both in dollars and in natural resources. But that doesn't mean it's not worth trying. Oil shale deposits in parts of Colorado, Utah, and Wyoming could yield more than 800 million barrels of oil.
Right now, oil shale doesn't provide much of the oil we use. But as mining technology develops and conventional oil resources decline, oil shale could play an important role in the future.
This moment of science comes from Indiana University.
Today's program was prepared by Jeremy Shear with help from Craig Cooper at the Idaho National Lab. I'm Yael Cassander.
And I'm Don Glass.
In sports, it's do-or-die time for the Chicago Blackhawks. Detroit routed the Hawks 6-1 Sunday to take a 3-1 lead in the Western Conference Finals. If Chicago doesn't come back tonight, it could be over for good. Hawks coach Joel Quenneville says he expects a monumental effort from his club. In fact, if it doesn't happen tonight, it's over for the season for the Hawks. Todd Wellmeyer will get the start for the St. Louis Cardinals when the Cards and the Milwaukee Brewers wrap up their three-game set in Milwaukee. He's 0-3 with a 5.97 ERA and four starts and seven relief appearances against the Brewers. Milwaukee plans to counter with Manny Parra, who lasted just 3.5 innings in his last outing and gave up 9 runs. Ace Carlos Zambrano will try to help the Cubs continue their home success against the Pittsburgh Pirates today when the teams conclude a three-game series. Chicago beat Pittsburgh 6-1 yesterday to snap their longest slide since May 2006. Now the club's hoping Zambrano can improve on his first start since coming off the disabled list. The Los Angeles Angels will try to avoid being swept in a three-game home series for the first time in nearly 2 years when they face the White Sox tonight. And the Parkland College baseball team will try to continue their winning ways at the NJCAA Division II Junior College World Series tonight. The Cobras play Scottsdale, Arizona tonight at Colorado Springs. Scottsdale defeated national champion LSU Eunice last night, 5-4. At sports.
Support for the Environment Report comes from the Park Foundation and the Gaylord and Dorothy Donnelly Foundation. You can hear the report and subscribe to the daily podcast at environmentreport.org.
A survey of top economists concludes that the recession will probably end by the second half of this year. But according to the survey from the National Association of Business Economics, many also think the economy and the labor market are going to remain weak. Here's more from NPR's Jim Zaroli.
Those surveyed believe the U.S. economy is showing signs of stabilizing. Chris Varveras is the association's president.
There's good news in the survey. We do expect economic growth to turn positive. And the pace of job losses is expected to narrow sharply over the remainder of this year, with job gains returning in early 2010.
But the survey suggests the economy will stay soft, growing by a weak 1.2% during the second half of the year, and unemployment will continue to climb to 9.8% by the end of the year. Varvera says the rebound won't be as strong as it normally is after a deep recession.
We know that the credit crunch, the housing problems, are working to hold us back. The fact that we're in a global recession and there's nobody out there to sort of be the number one engine of growth are reasons why we would grow less than would be typical.
One reason growth will remain soft is that businesses have cut back on spending and business profits are likely to fall 16% this year. And though a report released yesterday suggests that consumer confidence is rebounding, consumers remain generally cautious about spending. Jim Zaroli, NPR News, New York.
One of the country's biggest retailers holds its annual shareholders meeting tomorrow. Target was beloved by consumers and Wall Street investors, although that was before the economic downturn. Its share price has gone down sharply And one investor is especially disappointed. He's one of Target's biggest shareholders, and he's lost so much of his investment, initially worth billions, that he is now campaigning to shake up Target's board in what's becoming an expensive and high-profile fight. NPR's Yuki Noguchi has the story.
Consumers love Target so much that author Laura Rowley decided to write a book about why.
Target was the Walmart that's too cool to hate, you know?
The company ran music video-style ads featuring everyday items dressed up in designer names, like clothes by fashion designer Isaac Mizrahi and toasters from architect Michael Graves, but priced cheap.
Be happy together, design together, save together at Target.
There was a rally in a town in California to bring in a Target store. You know, I mean, most of these rallies are to keep out big box stores.
Their formula was marketing stylishness on a budget, and that worked very, very well as long as the housing boom held up. William Ackman bought into that Target mystique to the tune of about $3 billion.
My wife shops there, my mother-in-law shops there, my kids love it.
Ackman says Target still has the potential to be a dominant retailer. But despite recent layoffs, Target's earnings are down, and Ackman is itching for the 50-year-old store to change. Specifically, he says the company needs fresh blood and new ideas. Whereas Target wants to re-elect its existing board, Ackman is on a campaign to elect up to 5 new directors, including himself, to the company's board. And now this fight has become a test of wills, with shareholders casting their votes this Thursday to decide who wins. Ackman says his main beef with the board is that it too quickly dismissed one of his proposals to sell off Target's massive real estate holdings and refused to consider adding him to the board.
If a bit of a, you know, we do things our own way approach, and I think that can be good to a certain extent. But when a board becomes insular, when a company becomes unwilling to listen to ideas from the outside, you know, that's when even great retailers get into trouble.
Target declined to comment for this story, but defended its board's performance in an open letter touting its long history of profitability and share price growth. Last week, outside companies that advise shareholders weighed in. One firm, Risk Metrics, said Ackman and one other dissident should be added to the board. Another firm, Glass Lewis, disagreed. Warren Chen is managing director of Glass Lewis. He said over the longer term, Target's stock price has far outperformed its biggest rival, Walmart. The existing board of directors has relevant experience in the food and retail industries and is, in their opinion, as qualified or more qualified than the people Ackman wanted to elect.
All these things didn't convince us that really the company's in need of any sort of shakeup.
Chen adds that when stocks plunge, you see more of these sorts of spats. Already, he's seen 20% more proxy fights compared to last year. Target's shareholder meeting will take place this Thursday at a Target store in Waukesha, Wisconsin. Yuki Noguchi, NPR News.
It's 2:48. A group of University of Illinois journalism students is in the midst of a 2-week trip to Romania. They're putting together stories on the Central European country to explore its transition from the Soviet bloc to a full member of the European Union. They'll produce a radio documentary, which will air on AM 580 this summer. And along the way, they're collecting and sending us audio postcards of today's Romania. But this afternoon, we begin with history, and perhaps the fictional name Americans most associate with Romania, Count Dracula and his blood-sucking eye teeth. Dracula was the invention of Irish novelist Bram Stoker, but he was based on the Romanian ruler Vlad Tepes, who lived miles away in Transylvania. Romanian tour guide Luisa Lavarda separates fact from fiction outside Castle Bran, the tourist site that carries an informal but more recognizable name.
Dracula's castle. Of course, everything is a myth. It was all invented by Bram Stoker, the Irish writer, who heard about Vlad the Impaler, our leader. He found out that that our ruler was very, very cruel. He was called Dracula, which means the son of Dracul, the son of the devil. Yeah? Bram Stoker heard about that. He remembered, he wrote down somewhere Dracula, and he converted it into something much more commercial, which is Dracula. He wrote this novel, which of course is not a masterpiece. Everyone knows. Yeah, it's not the most literary novel there is, but it's a very interesting one which has given life to a legend.
That was tour guide Luisa Lavarda giving us a brief history of the origins of the quintessential fictional vampire, Count Dracula. In the days ahead, we'll hear more about life in the real modern Romania from University of Illinois students learning journalism in a foreign country. The fuel that drives one Spanish language television station is a reality show about a repo man. Many Spanish language networks may be known for soap operas that get higher ratings than their English language cousins in places like Los Angeles. But Nate DeMeo introduces us to a station that's bucking the trend with a repossessor turned TV star.
When Lou Pizarro was a kid growing up in the Bronx, every Tuesday night was A-Team night.
In 1972, a crack commando unit was sent to prison by a military court for a crime they didn't commit.
Young Lou loved the show, loved the car chases, loved the explosions. And when he got a little older, his love of A-Team style action led him to the Marine Corps, and later to a job repossessing cars.
That's where I got that idea from. I mean, I'm flipping cars. You watch the intro to the A-Team, they're flipping the Jeep. You know, I'm using helicopters, they're using helicopters. That's who I am.
For more than a decade, Pizarro was a successful repo man, parting people who were late on their bills with their stuff. It was dangerous, and it was fun. But he says as much as he enjoyed living like the characters on the A-Team, what he really wanted to do was make the A-Team, to make TV shows. He saw his chance a few years ago.
I got a call from Telemundo News Department. They asked me if I wanted to do the day in the life of a repossessor. And then when the news segment came out, everyone was saying, hey, you're the guy, the repo guy. And I'm like, whoa. So right after that is when I really, you know, put it to work.
He created a reality show called Operacion Repo. Each episode follows Pizarro and an A-team-esque ragtag bunch of misfits, his fellow repossessors, including his sister and his 20-year-old daughter.
Hey! They're calling you a shit!
The show's partly in Spanish, partly in English, and partly in bleeps. It airs on KWHY, one of the biggest Spanish language stations in Los Angeles.
It was a totally out of the box.
Fatima Goncalves runs the station. She says she took a big chance by putting the show on her schedule.
Since we were born, we watch novelas.
Novelas, those soapiest of soap operas, dominate Spanish language television. She says no TV programmer wants to risk alienating audiences by introducing a new format. But she runs an independent station without much of a production budget.
We cannot compete with the big players of novela world. You need to come up, okay, what else I can do?
What she's done is get into business with Lou Pizarro. Repo's ratings were so good that Goncalves put it on twice a day, 5 days a week. Now Pizarro has two other shows on her station, one about a tattoo parlor and another about people who rush to crime scenes to sell video footage to news channels. He's also got a bounty hunter show on the national network Azteca America and a repo movie on the way. And now, True TV, a reality network owned by the Turner Company, airs the English language Operation Repo.
Relax, you son of a...
It's a shame that they have to put people in the situation that they do.
Antonio Mejias Renta is the entertainment editor at the Spanish language daily, La Opinión. He's uncomfortable with a show that boils down to watching poor people get poorer. But he points out that the national networks cater to a broad international audience, with shows produced in Mexico and Colombia, and actors speaking perfect, accentless Spanish. At least Operacion Repo sounds like L.A.
In fact, they relish people who speak bilingually. They use a lot of slang, which is not something that you would find in network television, and I think that's part of the appeal.
Repo man Lou Pizarro says he's heard all the criticisms before, and he'll tell you there's a moral to the show. Don't buy what you can't afford.
The phrase, si no lo puedes pagar, no lo debes comprar. In English, it ain't no joke if you don't pay that note.
That's the show's tagline. It seems like it's plastered on just about every bus and bench in L.A., right below a picture of Lou Pizarro. He's probably the world's most famous repo guy. For NPR News, I'm Nate DeMeo.
Coming up on The World Today from PRI, many immigrant women work as child care providers. Some have lost their jobs as families reconsider the cost of outside help. That's true even in Hollywood, where some celebrities are reducing expenses and cutting back from 3 nannies to 2. Child care of the rich and famous, that story from Hollywood and the day's news coming up today on The World at 3 o'clock. We're broadcasting from Campbell Hall for public telecommunication, thanks to the generosity of University of Illinois alumni Alice and Robert Campbell.
Earth and sky.
The technical case for nuclear power, just like the technical case for wind energy and solar energy, is partly built on the idea that it's a low CO2 technology. But it's a high-risk and high-cost technology. That's why I think we shouldn't be doing it.
You're listening to electrical and nuclear engineer Arjun Makajani. He's the president of the Institute for Energy and Environmental Research.
Nuclear power is very expensive. Today, wind energy, for instance, is cheaper than nuclear power.
Makajani said that there's still no long-term plan for storing radioactive nuclear waste, which some fear could be used to make nuclear weapons.
Plutonium is generated in every nuclear power plant in the course of its operation, about 40 bombs worth every year.
Makajani has done studies to show how the U.S. could have low-carbon energy without nuclear power.
We have the technology today to say we can do this completely with wind and solar energy. We don't have a shortage of low-carbon dioxide energy sources. We have a shortage of two things. We have a shortage of time in which to solve the problem, and we have a shortage of money.
More at our website. I'm Lindsay Patterson. EarthSky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Community Blood Services of Illinois, providing all donated blood for patients in Champaign-Urbana, Charleston-Mattoon, Danville, and Effingham. There are no substitutes for donated blood. Blood donation takes 45 minutes and saves lives. Information at 367-2202 or at bloodservices.org. Blood donation. It's about life.
3 minutes before 3 o'clock, 78 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois. Dan Pounder's forecast for Illinois and Indiana this afternoon: in far northern Illinois, cloudy with periods of rain. Elsewhere, a mix of clouds and hazy sunshine and scattered showers and thunderstorms. Highs ranging from around 60 in far northwestern Illinois to 84 in the far south. Tonight, mostly cloudy with scattered showers and thunderstorms, most numerous across Indiana and southern Illinois. Lows ranging from around 50 in the north to 65 in the south. Tomorrow in northern and central Illinois, partly to mostly cloudy. Elsewhere, mostly cloudy with scattered showers. Highs tomorrow ranging from 64 in northern Indiana to 76 in far southern Illinois. This afternoon in Champaign-Urbana, mostly cloudy. There's a chance for a brief